call the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue to order. Welcome, everyone, to the only Senate committee that meets on Friday afternoons, which I will constantly remind everyone of and get credit for. We are going to start today by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 302. Day.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, this bill extends eligibility for amended repayment schedule due to additional taxes due to correction of property tax rule. What happened was in 2010 session, it was House Bill 3612, and it amended repayment schedule then, but while we're waiting for the bill to take effect, there were corrections still being made. So I guess this bill takes care of that. The period between the inception of the idea and until the law takes effect on May 27, 2010.
Okay, and we are honored by the president of the, or the co-chair of the... I'll just keep my mouth shut. Representative Buckley, would you like to tell us who you really are?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County. Thank you. As your administrator said, this was this bill before today, Senate Bill 302, adjusts the bill that we passed unanimously in February, House Bill 3612. In a nutshell, Senator Bates and I were contacted by constituents who had been informed by the county assessor that there had been an error made on their property tax. And the statute at that point gave the county the ability to demand payment, even though that this mistake had been made several years in the past. The county was able to demand payment repayment of that the lesser amount in 1 year. They basically said, even though we've miscalculated your taxes for 5 years or so, we want all of that back taxes in 1 year. The constituents who contacted us said, we can't do this. We don't have the money to do this. We tried to work with the county to say, can't you set up a payment schedule of some kind? And they said, no, we don't think statute allows us to. So basically, we brought forward the bill 3612 to say, let's try to fix this. So if the error is on the county's part, to require the county to allow the taxpayer to pay back their back taxes in a manageable way, a way that can work for them. And I have to admit that during February session, you might recall the Senate President was my co-chair, and I got distracted somehow. I don't know how, and I got distracted, and we neglected to pay enough attention to when the bill would go into effect. And so we got this bill done that everyone agreed was a good thing to do, but we left out the exact people who had contacted us to begin with about this problem, because their tax bill had been assessed prior to, obviously, when the bill went into effect. Mm-hmm. So Senate Bill 302 would fix that. It would make it retroactive for 2 years to bring in these people whose tax error was discovered prior to the bill going into effect, and I appreciate your consideration of it.
Thank you. And again, this is mistakes that are made by the county that the property owner has.
Correct. This is a mistake made by the county assessor.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of a constituent nightmare, isn't it?
A little bit.
You pass the bill to someone and then exclude them and include everyone else.
It was an interesting phone call in May of last year after that.
Okay. Are there questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We will bring this back later.
Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 302. And now we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 19, but I saw Mr. Sabalgio leave, so I don't know where he is. But I want to make sure we get the work session done. Mazin, welcome.
Well, thank you, Chair Rudick, members of the committee. Senate Bill 19 was in front of you just last time we met. We had the Dash 1 amendment, and we discussed those amendments, but at that time we did not have a fiscal, nor we had a revenue evaluation of the Dash 1. And at this time, We have that, and it should be in your packet. We found for the revenue impact about $1.4 million a biennium as savings in debt service payments due to reduction in the amounts that would be interest payments as a result of moving from the COPs to the 11Q bonds. The 11Q bonds would have lower type of interest, thus lower payments on that interest and the debt service. The fiscal office sent us what we know as in the previous lives as a hall pass or a fiscal light, since this bill is going to Ways and Means with a subsequent referral, and that's when they would take that fiscal into a little more robust language.
Okie dokie. Michael, did you have anything more you wanted to say about the amendment? Okay. Committee, this is the one that we are trying to get action completed on, this implementation measure, so that the treasurer can take advantage of the provisions of this bill in their next bond issue. So, Senator Morris, do you have a motion?
Is this going to Ways and Means by prior reference?
We need the amendment first.
Okay. I move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 19.
Senator Morris has moved the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 19. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 19 as amended with a due pass recommendation and subsequent referral to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Morris has moved Senate Bill 19 as amended to the Senate Ways and Means Committee, or the Joint Ways and Means Committee, with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And I will just say that I had conversations with the co-chair of Ways and Means, and we should be able to get expedited action on this. So now we will open a public hearing. I don't need to, but I will. Close the work session. We will now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 324. Chris.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 324, as drafted, there are a number of issues with the language in the bill. So DOR was going to talk to the main policy question, and the policy question that they were trying to get at was who should bear the cost of collection for cases where the taxes aren't voluntarily paid through the regular system. There were a number of discussions that the department had in the interim, and a number of questions were trying to get at that larger issue. So that's really the policy question that all of the language in the bill tries to get at, but there are a number of issues with the specific language in the bill.
Okay. Do we have anybody from revenue who wants to come up and talk about this? Deborah.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. Last summer, we were asked by a member of the legislature to provide a list of ideas as to how collection of tax already owed might be accelerated or enhanced. And we sent that list back over, and as a result, there are a number of bills in the system that reflect those ideas. Senate Bill 324 is actually a compilation of a number of individual items from that list. And as your staff indicated, that I think the overriding theme for the idea was considering that currently the general fund absorbs the cost of extra efforts that we put forward to collect delinquent taxes, is there any interest in the body in shifting some of that cost to the people who require that additional work? Currently, there's no fee, for example, for setting up an installment plan with us, monitoring the installment plan, taking further action if the installment plan is broken, and so on. There are fees that are passed along. Garnishment fees, for example, are passed along to the debtor. The federal refund offset program, that fee goes on to the debtor. We had a bill in the House Revenue Committee that only included the last item in the summary of Senate Bill 324. And when we discussed the bill with the House Revenue Committee, questions came up as to what do debtors pay now in the way of penalty and interest, and then also what are the costs to collect various types of debt. We have an answer to the first as the penalty and interest piece, but we're still working on the cost of collection, and we're going to get that back to them, and I'd be happy to share that with this committee as well. Thank you.
Thank you. This sounds like a work in progress, and did you want to speak on this too?
Thank you, Chair Burdick. No.
Okay. Since you spoke, what's your name?
Ken Ross from Department of Revenue.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Questions from the committee? Senator Telford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand the interest charge on delinquent taxes. It's obviously for the use of money, and since the taxpayer is using it, not the state of Oregon, I can understand that. Tell me what the penalty covers. Other than punitive, you know, trying to encourage people to actually file. I mean, should that not cover some of these costs that you've mentioned?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, it may, and I think that's why we're trying to get together the data on the amount of penalties that are charged in comparison to the costs that are incurred to collect the debt, and that's what we're working on now. The cost piece is a little more challenging.
Follow-up. So if, in fact, we outsource this to a collection agency who then will charge exorbitant collection fees, what would happen to the penalty that the state of Oregon currently charges a taxpayer? Would that be a double charge to a taxpayer?
Chair Burdick, Senator Telford, the fact that the debt goes to a private collection agency for collection doesn't relieve the penalty. So in answer to your question, the penalty would still remain on there, and there would be a fee paid to the private collection agency for the collections.
Hello?
Thank you. So again, what's the purpose of the penalty?
Chair Burdick, Senator Telford, that's something that's been discussed a lot internally, and I think in tax literature as well. Is it to punish someone? Is it to serve as an incentive to not behave badly? Is it to encourage voluntary compliance because you know you'll have a penalty if you don't comply? I'm not sure that I have an answer to that question.
Okay. Senator Hess.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. It seems to me that part of the calculus in coming to this is to collect as much back as we can for the state, and if adding more fees or penalties nets less, then it's not, in my mind, it doesn't make sense. And so I guess I'm not helping find a solution, but I think that should be part of the calculus. If just because you load it up with penalties and fees doesn't mean you're going to be able to now collect this money, whereas otherwise modest fees, modest penalties might be the way you get that money back. So, I mean, just to me, that's where that issue sort of hinges on.
Do you have any method for analyzing that?
Chair Burdick, Senator Hass, I do know that there was a study done by the U.S. Treasury Department a number of years ago that looked at penalties imposed under the federal system and made recommendations for changes in those penalties. And I don't recall that the changes actually took place, but they had a good analysis of what the penalties do. This is a question that we have discussed ourselves as to whether it's the penalties actually help people comply or they serve as a hindrance for someone to come in. For example, there's a penalty of 100% of the tax if a person files 3 consecutive years worth of returns after the due date for the third year. So if you have a person who's not filed for 5 years, they go to a practitioner and have the returns filed, and they're looking at the amount of tax they owe, and they're told, well, in addition to the tax and the interest, you'll also owe a 100% penalty. They may simply not file. not having the ability to pay. In those circumstances, we recognize that that's a problem and have provided for penalty waiver in the rule if someone voluntarily comes forward without us having to do work to find them, the penalty can be reduced by 70%. So that is a little bit of a stick and a carrot to try to get folks to comply. And I do think the penalties probably are intended to cover some of the collection costs. But what I don't know is whether, for example, the 5% failure to pay, paying up to 3 months late, if we need to do a little bit of additional work for that, is that penalty sufficient to cover the cost of that additional work to collect? The bigger piece, though, I think, is even if you didn't change the cost of collection or the penalty, do you want the general fund supporting our efforts that are a little bit more than what we do just to administer the normal tax? Or would it be appropriate to have that shifted in some way to another fund?
Sounds like a lot of work still remains.
Yes, I think so, Madam Chair.
Senator Telfer.
If I may, in answer to your question, I'm not giving you direction, but personally, I have no problem with the nexus, the taxpayer who is creating this cost at the departments to pay for it. I just don't want to see penalties on top of exorbitant collection fees, a duplication of a cost to a taxpayer. But I have no problem with the taxpayer paying instead of the general fund. It's just that I just don't want to see them double, mm-hmm. pay double, if you get my drift.
Thank you.
That's good direction. I concur with that. Any other?
Well, it's for sure, Madam Chair, we do not want the state of Oregon to be the bank for taxpayers.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Any other questions, comments? All right. We've given you a little direction as you move forward, and we'll see what you come up with.
Thank you.
We close the public hearing on Senate Bill 320, unless there's somebody else who wants to talk. Close public hearing on Senate Bill 324 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 325.
Senate, it's similar to 324. Senate Bill 325 has some issues with the particular language, and again, it comes out of what Deborah was just describing, and the policy question that they're trying to get at here is whether or not e-filing should be encouraged, and if the Assembly would like e-filing to be encouraged, how to go about that and who should bear the cost of that e-filing. Again, that's the larger issue, kind of setting aside some of the issues with the specific language in the bill.
Okay. Come on back up.
Thank you, Chair Burdick. Ken Ross with Department of Revenue. I will speak this time.
Good.
Senate Bill 325 has a couple issues in it. One is to mandate a direct e-file with the Department of Revenue for personal income tax returns. And this, as Chris mentioned, the issues in this bill came out of ideas from last summer that were presented in the interim committee. Direct e-file is not a new idea. It's been, we've been considering this for a long time, and there are several states that do this. The language in this bill mandates that we provide direct e-file for all taxpayers, and it also allows us to partner with the software community to make that happen. So there would be a cost, obviously, involved with that. If there was any issues with the language and for the direct e-file would be the word all. Right now, we are part of the Free File Alliance that happens with the federal, with the IRS, and the software vendors that participate in that, they set the limits on who could participate, and it's generally lower income, or they fall in a specific category, like they're military or over a certain age or under a certain age. So they set limits on it. That's something, if this committee had interest in moving this mandate forward, we would look to be able to set some limits also, because as you know, or Senator Telfer knows, the more complex the return, the more complex our processing and e-file system has to be. So the second issue in this bill, sections 6 and 7, has to do with accepting electronic payments and the cost to do so for the department. And we had a similar bill, similar language in a bill on the House side, and we told the members there that we think we have a way to work around the cost of accepting electronic payments. So we're working with a vendor that accepts credit card payments right now to so that the costs are not part of the Department of Revenue's expense. And there's also, we also have learned a little about a statewide project that eGov is working on for a statewide electronic payment system that we could hook into at some time in the future. So we think the language in 6 and 7, section 6 and 7, is not necessary. And I'll take questions if you have them.
Okay. Questions? Senator Hess.
Thank you. I assume this is it's a lot cheaper to process electronic returns than coming in an envelope, say, for an individual.
I'm sorry.
It's much cheaper to process.
Chair Burdick, Senator Hess, that is correct. It is more efficient and less costly to process an e-filed return.
I would rather, instead of having a fee for snail mail return, an incentive to file electronically, say, take $5 off the first time you do it, as opposed to, say, pay $15 that way. And I think that just is a better way to incent people to fire away. And I that would probably cover, I don't know what the processing cost is of, getting a return. My returns are fairly involved, and they're electronic, and I think it would be worth at least $5 of the state's time to have that on computer and to sort through all those forms. Just throwing direction.
Do you have a comment on that, too?
Mine's more directly to the bill, not the filing.
Does anybody else have an opinion on the point that
the only opinion is that with a Form 40, there's only two pages.
So you're only filing.
It's not as complicated as a federal return because they're not getting the full federal return. With e-filing, would you want the full federal return?
Chair Burdick, Senator Telfer, yes, we do require the federal return to be attached to the Form 40.
Not now.
For the
yes.
The two pages. Yes, Senator Telfer, we do. We ask for the first two pages of the 1040 to be attached to the 40.
Clarification, Madam Chair, thank you. I guess my point was, when Senator Hass mentioned the complication and he files federally, you don't have that complication at the state level because it's the Form 40 and or whatever, plus the first two pages of the federal tax return.
Chair Burdick, Senator Telfer, if Senator Hass submitted his with paper, that's correct. We would only get the first two pages electronically. We get most of the forms that are attached to the federal return. So it depends on the software provider, what they forms they support for Oregon.
Follow up. So then my question was, if somebody was to e-file, would you require the full federal tax form instead of just the first two pages of individual tax?
Chair Burdick, Senator Telfer, we would require the first two pages like we do for the paper version.
But you said you require it, but somehow you get more of it? How does that happen?
Chair Burdick, most of the software vendors do support all the forms, and they do transmit the entire return to Oregon.
Is that any kind of an issue for taxpayers to have? I mean, would it be any kind of advantage for a paper filer not to have that transmitted?
Well, It's just not a requirement right now.
All right. Any other questions? Senator Mark?
Well, now that we've moved beyond that.
Now that we move on, now your real question.
It's the payment issue. You know, and I get fried when you have to e-file or, you know, pay the feds, and it takes 3 days. Your money's out of your account for 3 days. There's a float there. The banks are making a fortune. Somebody's making a fortune because it doesn't. It comes out of your bank account, but doesn't get to where it's supposed to go for 3 days. So it's sitting in somebody's pocket.
And
it just bothers me.
In some cases, Senator Telfer, it's 5 or 6 days.
Yeah, well, and the other problem is it creates a somewhat of a bookkeeping problem for bookkeepers in that, you know, payday's the first, and yet the money comes out 3 days prior to the bank account. So we're trying to reconcile the bank account. It doesn't reconcile because payday really wasn't till the first. It's a bit of a nightmare, but it's just one of those things that bothers me that somebody's using money that doesn't belong to them for 3 to 5 days.
Would you please get on that?
Or at least direct it our way.
Yeah, we could use that float. Okay, any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, well, this is also a work in progress, but for the time being, we will. Anybody else want to talk on this? For the time being, we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 325, and we are done. Announcements. Gender House, do you have announcements?
We have announcements?
Well, I just wanted to announce that this committee will now enter into the sticky wicket of ESD reform. Senator Morris and I sent from the Education Committee House Bill 250, because there's a change in the school formula, which is under the purview of revenue committees. And, so welcome to this very exclusive club.
Well, thank you for giving us something to do.
Speaking for Senator Telfer and myself, we are absolutely thrilled.
You can thank us later. Gift basket or something.
I don't think it'll pack the room.
Let's hope not.
All right. Any other announcements? Okay. We are. Everybody have a good weekend, and we are adjourned. Adjourned.